Welcome to Fairbanks Real Estate Radio Podcast. Welcome. This is episode 8 of the Fairbanks Real Estate Radio podcast. I'm Ryan Danhauser again. This episode is going to be the presentation given by Gene Duvall and myself and Jay Duvall at the Interior Alaska Builders Association Home Show. This was a seminar that we did about the real estate market in Fairbanks and North Pole. You'll hear mostly Gene Duvall talking, a little bit me, a little bit Jay Duvall. It lasts about an hour. I had the recording microphone pushed up against the speaker, and Gene Duvall had a microphone that he was talking into, but sometimes he would have it too far away, and you couldn't hear very well. You could hear me the best because I happen to be standing closer to my recording microphone. So bear with me. I'll try to fix things what I can in editing. And thank you. Hope you enjoy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. I'm Gene Duvall.
Hi, I'm Ryan Danhauser.
I'm Jay Duvall.
And Christine's missing today. She had to sick dog, so she had to take it to the vet. I see some familiar faces. Coming back every year, thank you. We only have 55 minutes for this presentation, so the time is kind of tight. I will go through the material, and then at the end, we'll open it for questions and answers. After the show, the three of us are going to be at the booth from 4 to 6, and then we'll be wandering around. So if we have to finish before we can answer all your questions, please. Just catch us outside. Okay. So when we do this, I'm always surprised by the stats that we find. 2015 was kind of what we sent, but then when we pulled this last week, it always surprised me. This is what's keeping our real estate market alive. The interest rates have stayed low. Everybody said back here they're going to keep going up and up and up, and they haven't. So that gives a prospective buyer a lot of purchase power. For every $100 in payment at that rate, you're purchasing about $24,000 worth of house.
I think also we used to always tell people that anything below 7% is a good interest rate, and I think the perception on that is changing now. It's been low for so long. That probably it's more like anything below 5%.
Now, the interest rates change on a daily basis, so keep that in mind. So I started tracking these stats in 2006. And if you go to your handouts, too, at the bottom of each page, there's a number. We're in page 3 right now. If you want to follow. So 2006 in my mind was our bumper year, from which I've measured everything since. The market back here was, you couldn't stop it, you could sell anything, and people were paying $12. For 2007, we expected to continue, and towards the end of 2007, the nationwide market happened. The crash happened, and we followed afterwards very, very quickly. You can see what happened here. This million means the value of 1,313 houses. So look at what's happening up here. So this last year, we're just about where we were in 2016. The value in millions is just about the same. Compared to last year, we sold 150 more houses. Compared to 2013, a couple hundred houses. for our market, it's a big difference. So this, by the way, is it's multiple listing service. So there's also for sale by owners, which we figure probably account between 10 and 15% of our market. That's not reflected here. But there's more to it than this. So we'll get to it. You have anything? But. So price range. And this is always a real extra price. So we sold 1,200 houses, more or less. So almost half are under 200,000. And that's what our entire market, for Badger, for Turbine, for North Pole. So that's for the entire market. Then one-fourth from 200 to 250. Now, in this price range, so here you're looking at 800 plus houses. It's very difficult, or I should say challenging, to find good buys. The prices tend to get tweaked. There's also a lot of competition, what most buyers can afford. Well, this has really changed since the last couple of years is in this 250 and up, which is kind of what we sensed. It's any nice house between 250 and 350 was selling very fast for top dollar, and this confirmed. Over 500, and there's some incredible buys out there. So you can buy a 450, 500 house that to duplicate, to build it new, would cost $800,000, and you're buying them for pennies on the dollar. So what's also happening is buyers in this or sellers are selling their houses here in the 200 to 50 range, and they're upgrading to this range. And because of the interest rate being very low, it's managing to give more purchasing power. My take is if the interest rate goes up, all this is going to get really expensive.
And I think also the fuel costs being low has had an effect too on the larger houses selling more. So like between 2014, we only sold 17 houses of 400,000, and it's almost doubled there in 2015. And now, as I'm showing houses that are over 350,000, I've got a buyer that takes a while to make up his mind, and he there's no time for second showings on those. They're usually pending before they get a chance.
So here, at $4 a gallon, people were being very energy conscious, five-star plus. And now we're seeing, unfortunately, a take where at $2 a gallon, $1.75 a gallon, and it's not going to stay that way forever as we tell people. Okay. So, This was a real surprise. So usually, as we go into springtime, we are gaining 10 listings a day. So in February, we had probably 300 residential listings. By August every year, there's typically 800 plus. So the competition for sellers, as we go into the summer, will increase. I always tell people the time to put your house for sale is now, like February, March, April, May. Then as we go into June, the kids are out of school, people are procrastinating, we have all summer, and then in August, the sellers who haven't sold start lowering prices. Okay.
I think also that makes it look like there are fewer houses on the market right now, but actually I think that's made up more by pending transactions. So where there's 100 fewer from this time last year, I think a lot of them just have accepted offers.
But so far, you just told very rosy. You go on and see that it really is not that rosy. So there's some surprises up here. So This is that we have sold. This is year to date. From the 1st of January, the other day, we did. So this is kind of up to par. We are a little later for the home show this year, so that's another week. So a little higher, but that really hasn't changed that much from growth here to date. Pending means it has an accepted offer, but it hasn't closed yet. So this has changed a little bit, which is what we're seeing. There's a lot of activity the last 2-3 weeks where houses are being listed, but they are being pended right away.
If you look at that, 200 plus pendings, and then go back and keep in mind we're about 100 active listings short than what we previously had. That 200 number makes up for those active listings.
What this means if you're a buyer is if you find a house that you like, that's a good buy, don't deal with it. Make an offer and put an offer in place. 4 or 5 years ago, people thought, I'll offer 20-30% less than asking price. But that doesn't work in this market for a good listing if it's priced properly.
And if there's competing offers, you only get one chance, and that's it. If you make a low offer, they're not going to counter it. They'll just go with the other one.
And competing offers, multiple offers, is a very real thing right now in our market. And the seller has no obligations to give it to get everybody a second chance. Okay, so our market, 2/3 Fairbanks, 1/3 Badger Northport. So is it sold? This has remained pretty much the same for the last few years. The other market would be like Delta, like Healy, like Minana, and Healy is very hot too. To where Delta and Minana are so-so. So these are sold year to date in Burbank and Badger North Pole. About the same pendings, more or less the same, so 2/3, 1/3. Now actives, there's less actives in Badger North Pole this year, for whatever reason. Okay, here's a bad part. So this is kind of like, wow. REO means real estate owned. So once a foreclosure takes place, then the bank owns it. So that's what we call it, REOs. You can actually go to our website and do search through our MLS for REOs. So 2014, 2015, so bad news for North Pole in last year, so almost 20% of the market in North Pole was foreclosures. This year, in Fairbanks, what's going on here? So in Fairbanks, this year, 20% of those 300 some sold are REOs. Wow. So the REOs are usually somewhat distressed. They're sometimes they're frozen. Sometimes the pipes are busted, the boiler has busted. Sometimes they've been caught before that happens. But 20% of the Fairbank market and 22% of everything we've sold this year were REOs. We're active, the inventory is down. There are some good buys to be made on REOs too. To buy them, to flip them, you have to be very careful. Very easy to get burned very badly. Throwing 1 in 10 REOs It's a good useful buy. Right now, we just spend it on Friday. An REO that belongs to Alaska Housing. It was a little house in North Pole on two city lots. The bank caught it before it froze, so they winterized it. Everything functions. What did we sell it for? For $49,000? Well, and everything functions. So somebody wanted to rent it, which I think is what the buyer wants to do. You could rent it probably for $1,200 per month. So there's some good buys out there.
And I think also that high 20% number for year to date is also because the non-REO properties, non-bank owned properties, are more seasonal. So they might start listing them right now and then take them off the market around the holiday, where the REO properties are, you know, year round, pretty consistent.
Okay. So the process for the ones of you who haven't bought or sold, what we advise is whether you're a buyer or a seller, find yourself an experienced dealer. And ask referrals. That's usually the best way to find somebody. You know, ask your coworkers, ask your family. The goal is to find or to sell a property. So once we have an offer, so the house goes active, then the buyer puts an offer on. We typically ask for the buyer to be qualified to put earnest money down. So earnest money would be when you write an offer, you give a check for a certain amount, usually 2 to 3% of asking price. So if it's $200,000, you're looking at between $4,000 and $6,000, then that goes into a trust account. If your offer is not accepted, it goes back to you. If your offer is accepted, it is applied to your purchase. Once you have an accepted offer, then you have a discovery period. Customarily, Fairbanks has 15 days from date of acceptance. The buyer hires an engineer or a home inspector, they do an inspection, then they ask you, Mr. or Mrs. Seller, would you fix this, would you repair this? You can say yay or nay, or come to some compromise. If you can come to a compromise within a certain period, then the buyer can rescind the offer and get their earnest money back. At that point, you also inherit that engineer's inspection, which becomes a disclosure item for future buyers. There is also an appraisal. So the engineer inspection, typically, there's exceptions, is between the buyer and seller. The appraiser is the eyes of the bank. So the appraisal takes place between here and here. Sometimes the appraiser needs to come up with a value that meets or exceeds the purchase price. So if we sell a house for $300,000, the appraiser says, no, in my opinion, my comparables show that it's only worth $280,000. And they can only go back for comparables 6 months from the date they're doing their appraisal and within a certain area, ideally within 5 miles of what you're selling. So if you can, if the price does not come in, it opens the whole thing for renegotiation. Either the seller lowers the price, or the buyer pays more than the price value.
Can you contest the comparables, Gene?
Can you adjust?
If you contest, in other words, if you look at the appraisal and you think that what they use for comparables don't even come close, can you contest that at all?
Yes, you can appeal it to the lender. And the lender might ask the appraiser to reconsider. And sometimes that happens, not often, not common, the lender on some types of loans also has the discretion of adjusting it, not very often. So then once that happens, you close. Usually a typical closing is between 30 and 60 days on some very streamlined banks, especially with local banks. Sometimes we were closing in 3 weeks, but everybody gets pretty stressed out when that happens. Usually when you close, you're out of the house. The buyer takes possession the next day. In Alaska, usually we close one day, and there can be exceptions. We report the following day, and then that's when the title transfers. So it's, people say area, but it's really price. At the right price, there's a buyer for almost everything. You can have a house in a great location, great view, overpriced, just going to sell. So, again, you need to price it properly, and then the property has to be in good condition. In our market, for a good property, good location, we get top dollar. Again, that 250 to 400 range. Any house is in great shape. Right now, well-maintained, doesn't have to be new. The sellers are getting pretty top price.
And multiple offers.
Yeah. Again, the multiple offer is pretty important for buyers and sellers to understand. So if you're a buyer and the seller authorizes the realtor to disclose multiple offers, that's the first thing. To disclose multiple offers to buyers, a seller may decide, no, I don't want to disclose. The reason being is a two-edged sword. When you have multiple buyers, the buyers who have the best offer or who are going to make the best offer may decide, I'm not getting in a bidding war. I'm already stressed out. You know, I don't want to do this. I'll withdraw my offer. So it's a very fine balance that I usually ask my seller to authorize me to advise them on do we disclose them or not disclose them. But you can have a situation where three buyers are going to make offers. You disclose you're going to have multiple offers. Would they like to give it their best shot? And everybody wants.
Yeah, in most circumstances, they do their best offer. And like Gene was saying, it works out the best to tell people. Is there on the side of the disclosure, I guess.
Yeah. And most of the time, that's what I advise a seller is if there's multiple offers, it usually turns out the best for you. When we have on the buyer side, we may also advise you to do an escalating clause. How many of you have bid in eBay? So, say you offer $290,000. Then your offer would have a clause saying that if there's any other offers acceptable to seller prior to acceptance of my offer, then my offer would be increased to the net proceeds to the seller are $5,000 better than any other offer, or some language to that effect. This makes buyers very nervous. It could also be $500 better than any other offer. So this, if you are especially a first-time home buyer, and you find there's going to be multiple offers, and then I tell you, and then you explain an escalating clause, you're going to go, So you have to have the fortitude to do that. And again, get an experienced realtor who knows what they're doing. I usually explain this process at the time that I start working with the buyer. Very clearly, this could happen, so be prepared. This is how it reads. But it's a reality. We deal in my office alone probably with half a dozen multiple offers every month.
And when you do those escalating clauses, you always want to have a ceiling or a cap on.
Yeah. So it would be, in that event, if you do an escalating clause, the total purchase price would not be higher than 297. So you put a cap on it. Every once in a while, I'll see one with no cap. It's like, oh my God, okay? So, and it's usually because the body forgot to put a cap on. Then your property needs to be good, it needs to be clean. Avoid hidden gimmicks. If you need carpets, then you say, I'm going to give 10,000 allowance per floor. That usually doesn't work. It's usually better to clean that house out. Alaska Housing has a really good rehab program too, so there's different ways to do it. But from the seller's perspective, it's better to have that house in good shape if possible. Sometimes you can't. So your house costs $450,000 to build. Your land costs you $30,000. Then you have a well, septic, whatever. So you have almost $500,000 into that house. Can I sell it for $500,000? Probably not. And can you sell it? Buyer willing to pay you that money? Probably not. The buyers are gauging your value comparing it to other houses. If you're building, if you're doing new construction, then the value is whatever it's going to cost you to build. So that changes the whole dynamics. In Fairbanks, Alaska, there's very few builders right now who are being able to build spec houses to compete with the resale market. To compete with existing houses. There's a handful that are managing to make it, and they're typically doing 5-star plus houses or 6-star. But a new house in Fairbanks is like a brand new car. The moment you drive it out the door, it's probably worth less. So if you're building, you better stay in that house for a few years. Anything to add in houses? So usually, say we're listing your house. You decide to use it. If you hire us, we do all the paperwork. Then we spend probably a couple hours doing your honeydew list. And I have someone on this laying back there who are past clients, and I've done more honeydew lists for them. I'm like, sure, you check a stake out. So if you do things, your house is show ready, then we go active. Usually, do not go active till your house is show ready. And I said, we just do your list, we walk through, we ask you for permission to nitpick. I've learned that the hard way. I forgot to ask a lady permission to nitpick your house. At the tail end, she was so offended that I owe my job. So I try very hard to never forget, may I nitpick your house? So spend your money wisely when rehabbing or when getting it ready. So usually the first thing, the most important thing I need to contend with is to advise folks to declutter. So usually most houses you need to declutter to some degree. Sometimes I may even suggest you need to evict your brother. Your brother or your son needs to go. Or I may say you need to go or I'm going to get you like 30-40% less. So you should get that house in really good shape. It's very important. Right now, I have one where I have a brother who's being kicked out. That's the way it is. So a smell is very important. So a house that smells bad, people won't stay. So unless you're giving it away or close to giving it away, the house needs to smell well. That goes to the carpet. If you have smelly carpets, you have dogs or cats, you're going to have a problem. People are going to walk in and turn around and say, I'm getting out of here. So house needs to smell good. It doesn't need to be chocolate or chocolate cookies. I mean, that's all great, but it just needs to smell clean. If we have a carpet that's been sold by animals and it got into the subfloor, we likely advise you to pull that carpet, kills the floor, in other words, seal it with a paint sealer, and then put a new pad and so on. That can be expensive, and sometimes you can't afford to do it, then we do what we need, what needs to be done, but that usually means substantial price reduction. I always kind of tell sellers, if I'm going to sell your house as is, I often get that request. I don't want to do anything. Okay, so this is what I think the value could be if it was show ready. So let's take 20-30% off if you want to do that. It's pretty substantial numbers when you sell as is that the seller is leaving on the table. If you're a buyer and you can look past these things and pinch your nose or do whatever you need to do, then sometimes you get some good buys, and that's where you can get into the rehab loans, like the Alaska Housing Program, where you can put the missing equity by the time you close.
And also, as a seller, if you're, the house that you're selling is probably going to be different from the house that you're living in, so you want to pack up probably 70% of the stuff that you'd normally have in the house and, you know, put it in boxes in the garage or in storage or something, and kind of live as bare bones as you possibly can.
We had a house in City Light Boulevard, which is on Bird Hill. Really good buy, well priced, and the sellers had moved, nice couple, but they had animals, they had snakes, they had lizards, they had ferrets. Ferrets had it worse. Does anybody here have ferrets? I hope I'm inoffensive. And we couldn't sell it. We eventually had to pull the carpets, kill the floor. The poor guy who did the painting was pretty unhappy with me by the time he finished. So, but then the house sold. When we're doing showings, whoever you have it listed with, so say like if it's us, it'll always be my office that sets the appointment. Ideally, we give you one day more warning, but it doesn't always happen. Then, as you're going out, leave all the lights on, have the house looking pretty. If you have windows, if it's sunny, open those drapes so it lets the light in. If you plant flowers in the summer, I always say $200 worth of flower are worth $5,000 in an offer. So get that house looking pretty. In the showing process, this is kind of how the process goes with the buyer. How many buyers or prospective buyers do I have here? Okay. So usually we'll find a house on the internet, in one of our websites, in realtor.com. You look at it, so the time for a seller to capture that buyer's interest with computers is 1 second. You look at that first picture, click, you don't like it, click, you're gone. So it's important for your agent to get good pictures in there. For several years, I've been paying a professional photographer to do it. Then the next thing that happens is that prospective buyer is going to drive by your house. Again, now you have more than 1 second. Now you have maybe 30 seconds to a minute. Either stop hunting, it looks good, look, or keep driving. If your house is a mess outside, a good chance that I'm not going to get shown for you. The buyers are going to drive by, and we always tell buyers, please drive by. If it's not a good drive-by in the MLS, I might say, not a good drive-by, but please look inside. But most of the time, that does not happen. They just keep driving by.
And I'll tell people, you can't tell if you love a house by driving by it, but you can tell if you hate it.
Yeah. So if you're going to be setting up showings, I mean, typically, there's an exception to everything, I would advise you to do before we set the showings, drive by. We do contract with buyers too, where buyers will hire us to be a buyer's agent. So we do a search in the MLS. The search I advise to be very wide in your parameters. Then from 20 listings, I ask you to drive by and to narrow it down to 6, if possible. And then people will drive by if they don't like the neighborhood, if they don't like the outside, they don't like whatever. They usually manage to narrow it down to 6 or 8. And then once you start doing the short, depending on the house, how simple, how complicated, probably half an hour per showing. You look at two houses, I'm going to ask you if possible to scratch one out. If you look at 20 houses without eliminating, or even at six houses without eliminating some, at the end of one day you're confused. If one is mediocre, we don't scratch it, we'll just put it to a side. Usually, if we are in my car, then once we eliminate, I put a line through it, I throw it in the backseat floor. The ones that we save for our possibilities, we put them on the dashboard, and then at the tail end, we talk about each.
Yeah, and I think that eliminating is also important, because if you don't do that, you're building a house in your mind that doesn't exist. So you like, I like the garage on that one, and I like the view on this other one, and I like the open floor plan on this other one, and then all of a sudden, that's a house that you'll never find.
Just more on the showings. I'm having the house ready, have the beds made, dishes put away, uncluttered, clean, and smelling good.
Yeah, and if you want to really have your ideal house, then you need to build a house. Kind of how it goes. And then be prepared to spend that dollar.
What about staged versus empty?
So it will depend on the house. Usually some furniture looks better. Some staging to some degree looks better. But depending on the house, if you have a house that's used, usually you take your art out of the wall, this and that, and you're going to need a whole paint job. So it depends. And I think we're doing good for time. We can actually open it. We're almost through here, and then I'll open it to questions and answers. Okay, so as a seller, some things. So I always like as a seller to be prepared. Once we have an accepted offer, that really means nothing till it closes. So what really matters is to get your household to close on the transaction. So if all these things are not up front, there's possibilities that any of these could bust your deal. A plot plan is a survey that shows your boundaries in relation to the property, to the well, to the septic, and so on. So it's kind of like a diagram, shows your house, where the well sits. In the last 10 years, there's a lot of things that have changed from requirements from the bank. So it used to be that setback violations, who cares? It used to be that a small encroachment, who cares? And now that the investors at the banks sell the mortgages too, don't usually allow for this. Again, it depends on the investor. If you have Alaska Housing, then it's usually easier to have some dialogue. But a plot plan, if you don't have, I advise to get it up front. I sold one house very early on in my career without a plot plan. It belonged to a surveyor. He didn't have a plot plan. He said, I know where my boundaries are, so I sold it. And it had gone on to Joe Runyon, the mushroom. People remember Joe Runyon? Okay, so we sold the house from Joe to the buyer for $30,000 as an asset. And the buyer created a whole new house around this smaller house that then they called me 5-6 years later to sell for $150,000. Then during the sale process, we needed a plot plan. It had a bank. And lo and behold, the corner of the house encroached into the neighbor's property. So typically, then you do what's called a quick plat, and the neighbor will cede to you a small corner, a small piece, either for money or exchange. Sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not. So that the neighbor in that case happened to be DNR, the state of Alaska. The property was not for sale. So it took an act of the legislature. It took about a year. It cost $10,000. And I paid for that. Nice hit. So it was a nice lesson, but a plot plan is very important. from the nation. So you're in a base floodstone, or near a river or near the coast. You may need floodstone insurance. And then you build the cash, and maybe you didn't need it back then. The floodstone, lo and behold, change. So FEMA will change the FEMA maps pretty regularly.
Probably every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. So like some areas by Feather Lake, by Van Horn, they were not in the floodstone aid, now they are. So if you need flood insurance, it could be $5,000 a year, $400 a month. So if the buyer doesn't know this and they enter into the purchase agreement, and here's another $400 a month, forget it, they'll bust it. So things are very important to do. The same for arsenic, nitrate, and radon that can be deal busters in a transaction, or they advise. We have radon, we need to let buyers know so they can back out there.
And going back to the plot plan, one thing that's a little different in Fairbanks from like Anchorage is that we've been reusing older plot plans. And I think that there's kind of a trend now for that to not happen so much anymore. So somebody says, well, I'm good, I've got a plot plan from 1983 that shows where my house sits in relation to the lot lines and stuff. And well, for one thing, the septic system might have changed. That's the obvious one. But, you know, title companies now are rejecting old, smudgy-looking, hand-drawn plot plans where they can't read stuff on them. So they'll require to get a new one anyway.
Where do you get a plot plan?
From a surveyor.
Yeah.
From the last surveyor.
They'll be anywhere from $400 to, you know, $1,200 plus, depending on whether you're in an easy subdivision or, you know, more difficult to survey.
Yeah, we advise you to call. So becoming a land surveyor has become kind of difficult in the last few years. So most surveyors are very busy. So if you call cold turkey, we'll talk to you in September.
Yes. What about adding a shed to the property? Would you require a plot plan?
So a shed, we try to get away with not having to do one, as long as you're not on a permanent foundation.
Just on pure blocks.
Yeah, so probably, you're probably okay. Again, the buyer may insist, as part of their offer, I want a new plot plan.
Sheds can even be sometimes get away with being inside of a utility easement and all kinds of stuff, as long as you know that someday Golden Valley might decide to knock that down. But
yeah, and also for folks to know, so there's an obscure estate statute for surveyors. So every profession has their own statutes and regulations. So by either regulation or statute, a survey for the mortgage survey is for one-time use. And some surveyor will put that in the plot plan. This is for one-time use only for the sale by such and such person.
Probably sometime in the near future, we won't be able to keep old plot plans at all. There'll just be a new one every. I think in Anchorage they do that now, right? They get a new one for every transaction. No?
So flood surge is a spending.
There you go.
So they're measuring to your lowest grade. This would cost $1,000. There's also ways to do something called a LOMA, a level of map amendment. So that's fairly simple, but it takes time and money. So I usually advise if I see you're on Blotzone, or I think it may have changed, I'm going to advise you to do a Blotzone. And water tests, so typically what's required for some financing is an E. coli total coliform. Here it's very common to test for arsenic and nitrates. So if you're a seller and you're on a well, I'd probably advise you to do it yourself. I usually will bring the bottles for a lab. Take your samples, do a chain of custody, and do arsenic and nitrate. So the E. coli total coliform is simple to correct by bleaching. But arsenic and nitrate can be more challenging, and those can be deal busters. This is $550. A radon test, if you're on the hills, you're on schist, or on broken rock, or on bedrock, you probably have radon. The question is it less than 4 picocuries, or is it 200? So I usually will advise you to do this. They usually do a 3-day test. It's kind of like a spot test. And four people curious is the year average. And this would cost $225.
Yep. We've got about 7 minutes left.
For buyers, you're a buyer, you need to get pre-approved. Now, understand a local lender. So we have lots of local lenders. Some have local underwriting, and some not. I prefer local underwriting, but there's some local lenders who are very, very good, too, who don't have local underwriting. And before you do this, your credit score is under, what is it, 640, 680, somewhere in there?
Oh, that's not a different slide.
So get pre-approved. And sometimes if we have a low credit score, the lender will coach you. The lender will show you what needs to be done. Sometimes people say, I don't have credit. I have poor credit. Still, go see your lender. And I said, we'll guide you through the process. We'll tell you the call. And the lender can coach you to fix your credit. So if you're a buyer, unless you have one very specific house, I want that house, try to see in the same day 3 or 4 houses, please.
580 to 640 is the credit score.
Okay.
We talked about that.
Yeah, again, we talked about choices. That's an important one. So are you going to stay there for the next 20 years? Okay. But very often people tell me I'm going to be there for the next 20 years, and next year they're telling me things change, I'm selling the house. So it's nice to buy a house and you sell again and not lose money. So I always feel much better when I can make my buyers and sellers money. I always get what we do. It's happy things, usually a happy ending. You're a buyer, I give you keys. If you're a seller, I put a big chunk of money in your hands. We just put a check for $1 million and a nice, beautiful lady who's 95 just yesterday. Is it yesterday? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just yesterday. So, wow, that changed her life and for the years that she had left and for her family. So that's a good response. Yeah. It took us 8 years to make it happen, but it did. So, important to figure out not just what your payment is. So my payment, so in payment we call PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And it's usually rolled into most mortgages at one payment. So that's easy to know, but what else is it going to cost you to hold that house? If you're buying a house with a water tank, so do you have a 3-quarter ton truck? So if you're having water delivered, then it costs 9 cents a gallon, 10 cents a gallon. So you're a single person, and you're frugal, and you don't like long showers. I like long showers. A couple $100 a month. If you're a family with a holding tank, with kids, $400 a month. Remember that formula that I was talking, for every $100 of PI equals about $24,000 in purchasing power. That's not the way it is. I have a lady from Wells Fargo from Alaska out here. Yeah, so that's a lot of money. So $400 per month, if you're paying for water, equals almost $100,000 worth of purchasing power in a house. So instead of $200,000, you could have bought a house for $360,000 to $370,000. And well is usually maintenance free. And well can be a mess, but it's usually maintenance free. And also, there's areas with bad water, it tastes bad. It might be healthy water, but it tastes bad. One of the first things I do with the buyer, we walk into a house, we walk into the kitchen, I turn on the faucet, look for a glass. If there's no glasses, take it with your hand, taste the water. Because I want you to taste it before we make the offer, not once you own the house. And you can say, I cannot drink this water, then so what would it cost to fix it? Sometimes you can spend $4,000 or $5,000 in a water softener system and still have ugly tasting water. We can put an arrow system sometimes, reverse osmosis, takes care of most everything, but still, it's good to know ahead. So, that means the A, you should be zero down. FHA, conventional panning maker in America, Alaskan LCD, 5%. There's exceptions to that right there, Jan. Okay. But particularly, that's what it's going to be. You're buying an investment property like a duplex to rent, and you're not going to live in it. Most of a little bit. 2 to 4 family, a little more for cabin and land loan. Again, different lenders have different programs. It's all very fluid. They keep changing on a regular basis. So I usually, when I have a question, I go to one of my sources. And the important thing is not to know everything, but to have sources for what you need to know. You figure out what fits your needs. You used to be able to buy cabins or cabin loans. Usually, it's a cabin with no running water, with no septic, with an outhouse. The construction may have some issues, but there's usually a way to fit, to make all of this fit for the particular house. So usually when I go to list a property, my first thing is, how do I sell it? How does it get financed? FHA is very strict. FHA requires egress windows. FHA and VA cannot have any paint on the outside, even on the shed. You know, if you're selling this thing and it's all bubbly, or the surface, the paint is peeling, and you're closing in January, great, what do you do? So you may need to ask, or maybe the lender will allow you, maybe not, but it complicates things with royalties. So it's important, depending on the house that you have, to know what you can actually sell it as. If you have a house with no egress windows, every window is more than 44 inches high, or it doesn't open 5.7 square feet, you shouldn't take an FHA offer, because you're going to have to put new windows. Now, it may be that there's no other offers, and I'm going to guide you down that path, but then it's important to know the surprises that may come along for the seller. There's grants. Okay. There's a good number of grants that are available in current.
So IRHA, Interior Regional Housing Authority, has a team grant. It's a native grant. And that's typically 20% of the purchase price. The lender looks at it as a down payment.
And for that you need to have a certificate of Indian blood. And if you qualify, it's a great program. And it's very easy to work with. It's also a type where any repair that an engineer finds is a required repair.
Yeah.
So again, some houses we don't want to do every repair that the engineer is going to find. We're going to say, no, I'm not going to do this. Well, then it would not work for the interior of the house.
And it's important as a buyer to make sure that you know exactly what you're going to do when you make your offer, and that you don't decide, well, I think I'm going to get that grant later on. So you put that in the offer so that the seller knows what they're in for.
Yeah. And yeah, tell us about your experience with the original house last year on that townhouse.
Oh.
So this is a typical example. He's actually helping his cousin to buy a house.
So we found this property. It's a zero lot line. And the Interior Regional Housing has a requirement for the inspection to be done. Well, this particular house didn't have the proper firewall in between both the different units. So in order for it to work, they would have ended up tearing out all the kitchen cabinets, putting a whole other layer of sheetrock from the living space and then also up into the attic space.
On both sides.
Units.
So two different elements. Yeah.
So the previous construction was not grandfathered in as the codes changed.
Correct.
Right, so it's not grandfathered. For those kinds of things, there's no such thing as a grandfathered. This particular place had also been built as a duplex. And then the fellow who bought it did a replat and separated it into two units. So, and that's fairly common to find here. So that's the typical then perfect neighborhood housing. So that's usually through Alaska Housing. They pass on the money to Alaska Housing.
Yeah, that's an income qualifying program. I used to work for Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing a long time ago. It's income qualifying, and they use the credit that they get from the first mortgage lender, typically. There's the Home Start program, which comes and goes, seems to come and go really fast, so we don't get to deal with it very often, because by the time the funding comes out, they've usually spent it all on. Alaska Housing Closing Cost Assistance Program is really good. I've done one of those just last year, and it was really helpful for someone. And then USDA Rural Development subsidizes your interest rate based on your income, and then they recertify it every year.
And the USDA, the RD, there's two different types. One where you're dealing directly with the Department of Agriculture, and one through a lender. Again, anything an engineer finds is a required repair. Mm-hmm. Yes, Jen.
Is the IRHA loan a income restricted loan? Or just native restriction?
It also has income. Mm-hmm. Also has income restriction. Yeah. The RD to the U.S., to the Department of Agriculture, is very painful. It takes a long time. And sometimes we'll embark through it, but if there's other options, if you're able to do it with a lender, again with a local lender, it's easier to navigate through. So if you have less than 20% down required, PMI. So and the PMI on a $200,000 house will likely be around 100. Bucks a month. So it's nice to have, if you have that much down, you can get it just the PMI. The minimum credit score, and from here, higher than this is better. Okay, so that's the bare minimum. Some lenders will not touch this, but some will. Just one part of the world part of what are you doing now?
620, VA 600.
Okay.
I think there's only one lender in town that will identify me. It was Prospecting Jim's Farm.
Oh.
And Jen, what's
620.
So keep that in mind. And then when you're doing this, you start to buy a house. Please don't go buy a car. Please don't go and back your credit cards.
Don't
quit your job.
Buy a bunch of furniture.
Don't split up with your wife. Wait till you build your mother's house. but it is happening again. You go buy a car, and your debt to income ratio, your lender's going to check your credit. Before we close, when do you check?
When I'm doing my pre-qualification. And then if we don't close in 130 days from that pool, I have to pull it again.
You have to pull it again.
So if something changes from the first pool to second pool, we could be 2 days out of closing and all of a sudden not have a qualified buyer.
Yeah.
It's happened.
And how about for Alaska Housing, Jen?
We follow their rules, 120 days.
Okay, about the same. Okay, so, yes.
Do appraisals come in typically higher than the borough assessment?
The wonder of their assessments. So the permanent North Star Borough, assessments are all over the place. So it used to be the wisdom that the assessments are 10 to 20% lower than real value. Yeah. So the appraisal or the assessment could be 100,000 more than the house worth. Could be 100,000 less, or it could be right on. So don't go by assessment.
That is listed my house. Actually lower than the borough assessment. So.
Okay. Yeah, so the assessment is low. I wish there was some guidance also when the borough assessor comes by, usually they don't go inside your house. They don't know what's inside. If you contest, if you argue about the value they come up with, most of the time, is there any tax assessors in here? No. Most of the time, they'll roll over. So if you contest it every year and they know they're going to be wasting time, they'll probably, if you say, no, you came in at 130, I think it's worth 120 because I have mold in my basement. Most houses have some mold here or there. Right there, they are going to take 10-20% off. So don't go by the 7, so I can tell you.
Do you have any idea why Healy has such a great appeal in the market right now?
Yeah.
I've dealt with Healy quite a bit. It's their values are actually pretty similar to Fairbanks, as long as they're not on lease land. If they own their own property, then we can pretty much almost use comparables from Fairbanks. I mean, I try not to, but their values are pretty similar. There are not that many houses that come on the market at one time, and then you get a whole bunch of people coming in to work at the. To work at the park or the coal mine or Golden Valley too,
and the park.
Yeah.
So the park is a big mix out there. So many people who come through every year. UCBelly, I don't know what's going to happen to coal, but I don't think they slow down.
You mentioned leased land. Who owns the land that's leased?
The railroad does, but it looks like the coal mine does. But the coal mine is subleasing it out from the from the railroad.
So UCBelly had a lease from ARR, and then they sublease it out to distribute employees, and so they started that. And the Alaska Railroad will not sell their land.
Healy also qualifies for rural, so they have the 10% down with no mortgage insurance.
Yeah.
Makes it a little easier to finance.
And do you touch lease land?
We do.
Yeah. So that's going to be challenges too. And like I said, we'll meet the three of us at the booth at 4. In the meantime, we'll be wandering around. Feel free to ask the questions. Remember, even though our market looks like it's exciting right now, Fairbanks estate is cutting back on a lot of money, and we're barely starting to feel that. We quite haven't felt the budget cuts yet. So we're curious. So, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Fairbanks Real Estate Radio Podcast. Again, this is Ryan Danhauser. I know the audio quality wasn't super great, but I hope you're able to get something out of that. If you have any questions or you have some ideas about what other kinds of things you'd like to know about, feel free to give me a call, ask some questions, send an email. You can reach me on my cell phone at 907-978-2607. Email is ryandanhauser@mac.com, ryandanhauser@mac.com. And the website is ryandanhauser.com. Please feel free to give me a call. Let me know what you think. Leave a review on iTunes if you're listening. Thank you.